Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mark My Words here on the Life Coach Radio Network today, November 17th, 2013. I'm Mark Shaw, and you are listening to Mark My Words. And we are coming to you live from New York City, just steps away from the world-famous stages of Lincoln Center. I'm a certified life and business coach, and twice per month I host Mark My Words, which is a life coaching-oriented show where I interview various people with inspiring life stories of overcoming adversity. I interview authors of great coaching-related books and programs, as well as many others who have great things to say. So tune in the first and third Sunday of every month. Today I'm going to interview Fairfax County Police Officer Billy Brett. Billy is one of those cops you see on a motorcycle out there protecting us from all the bad guys. Okay, he also gives out speeding tickets, but that's also in the interest of protecting us as well. So we're going to be talking a bit about the book that Billy has written, among other things about his life, and I can think of no better way to introduce him than to share with you the write-up that appears on Amazon.com about his book, Billy's Never-Ending Battle, Creating a Wonderful Life with Passion and Purpose. Imagine a man who's part Forrest Gump, part Clark Kent, part George Bailey from It's a Wonderful Life. Incredibly, such a man exists. In this lively memoir, Billy Brett offers a captivating look at his battle with ADHD as friend and foe, using sweeping strokes to recall the people and events that helped to shape his imagination and dreams, including his hero, Superman. Brett shows how he struggled with a black cloud that seemed to threaten his self-worth, his sense of success, and his dream of becoming the police officer that he knew he was meant to be. As a policeman, Brett finds that his black cloud nemesis has pursued him, turning minor self-doubts into major setbacks of self-confidence. Overrun by doubt and despair, even to the point of focusing on the idea of being hit while riding his motorcycle, he is indeed run over. Brett uses his accident to learn that he has always had a treatable disorder called ADHD, Attention Deficit Hyperactive Disorder. He begins to understand how he's been projecting the failures he has experienced in life. With the black cloud no longer in control, Brett begins to turn self-doubt into self-power, hyper-focus into easy resourcefulness, a channel-surfing mind without remote control into clear intent, and a fear of failure into imaginative success. He begins to see what a wonderful life he has as a cop, husband, and father. This funny, candid, and fast-paced book is an invaluable, empowering resource for those wishing to understand ADHD with its challenges and struggles and its joyful freedom of creative expression. So Billy, the author of Billy's Never-Ending Battle, Creating a Wonderful Life with Passion and Purpose, is with us tonight, and I'm honored to have him on the show. Hello, Billy.
Hello, Mark. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're so welcome, and it's so great that that you're here. I so appreciate your being on the show, and I can relate quite a bit, as you know, to some of your trials and tribulations with ADHD, as I was also diagnosed with ADD when I was 30, and I deal with it every day. So I can certainly relate to the channel surfing mind without the remote control. It's like someone else is holding the remote and the channel just keeps changing. And before you know it, time goes by and whatever you were focused on an hour ago is just completely forgotten.
It's so true.
That can be pretty frustrating. So anyway, so welcome. I'm really delighted to have you on the show. So how many bad guys you chased down today?
Today, none. Today's Sunday. No, there's no crime or traffic violations on Sundays.
Ah, people behave on Sunday, huh?
Exactly.
Good to know. So, well, very good. So, Billy, I want to start off just by asking you really what it's like for you as a Fairfax County motorcycle cop. The thing that I'm just so fascinated about by you, as I've told you a million times, is, and I'll tell everybody out there, if Billy could get away with wearing a red cape every day, he would. He's the closest thing we have to Superman. So we'll be talking a little bit later about your obsession with Superman from when you were a kid until right through until now, which is just really charming and endearing. And so I'd just like to know a little bit about what it's like. How would you describe, in a nutshell, life as a Fairfax County motorcycle cop? What is it that excites you and motivates you in your work?
I'll tell you, well, the first thing, obviously, you asked about the cape. You know, it's funny, there's really no need for it because I've already got the cool boots, the leather jacket, the helmet, and a brand-new Harley-Davidson police motorcycle. So I think a cape really would just be overdoing it. There's no need to. So, but just in that mere fact alone, the fact that I get to throw a leg over that bike every single day and get paid for it. You know, and every day is completely different. You know, of course, now the weather's starting to turn. Every day I start off, you know, I'll stop by my local Starbucks to get a cup of ambition before I head out. And, inevitably people say, oh, my God, you ride in this weather? You know, you got to take the good with the bad. Not every day is going to be 70 degrees and crystal clear perfect. You know, we got to get out there in the cold weather as well. So, but
I want to be a cop in Los Angeles.
Well, yeah, that too. But then again, you have to deal with the earthquakes and all that. So I don't want to be riding down the highway one morning and have no highway there. So,
Good point.
Yep, absolutely.
So great. So what would you say is like just one of your most recent successes that you're particularly proud of as a police officer?
Well, on the personal side, as far as the tactical training, and we train virtually every day, whether it's just going through the cone courses at the office. We'll set up obstacle courses that we'll run the motors through just to keep sharp on our skills and so forth, as well as just the basic academy training that we'll get every day. There's different classes, college classes, as well as tactical and police officer science classes that are offered. I recently went through and succeeded a tactical rifle course that we have here, a very difficult one that I fully expected to fail out of, actually. And by the time Friday came along, I was able to shoot almost perfect. Actually, I missed a perfect score by one round. So
wow.
I was very happy that I did it. So,
what do you attribute your success to, since you thought you were going to fail, but you did so well? What do you attribute that to?
It's funny, Mark. It goes back to what I talk about in the book, this perceived black cloud that follows me around, and it seems as though that whenever I think too hard on something, that's when I tend to fumble the ball. And I was so convinced that I was going to flunk out that I didn't realize that I was now at ease, that I was now at peace with it and not thinking about it. And thusly, when I went into the class that morning, not thinking about it, not worried about it, because in my mind it was already done, well, I ended up shooting a perfect score. Because I was no longer worried about it. And I didn't realize it until after the fact. I'm like, you Nimrod, you got to take it easy, take a deep breath, and just relax. And that's been, you know, 48 years worth of a thought process. You know, I'll think about something too much, and if I'm thinking about it and worrying about it, well, then, of course, it comes to fruition.
Sure,
It's when I relax and just let it flow. And it's funny, Dr. Ned Halliwell, in his books that were a big eye-opener for me, talks about that, how you get caught up in the flow, and it's just an amazing, amazing thing. It's so true, especially for those of us with the gift of ADHD. So,
sure, yes, and a gift it really could be actually. I presume you're talking about one of his books, Driven to Distraction, which what an amazing, amazing book that was.
Wasn't it?
So anybody listening tonight who wants a really, really great resource to read about ADD. Is it Ned or Ed? It's Edward Halliwell, right?
It's Edward Halliwell, and he calls himself Ned, and
he refers to himself
as Ned. So,
gotcha. And the title of the book is Driven to Distraction. I remember crying when I read the book because I just felt like, oh my God, somebody wrote about me.
Yep.
You know, I thought I was the only moron in the world that had the trials that I was having, and then I realized, oh my God, and I imagine that's similar to how you felt.
If the light bulb literally went off, and it was as though I literally had a Truman Show moment. I started looking around because some of the things he was talking about was so close to home. I'm like, I'm being filmed. I've been filmed my whole life. Clearly people are watching me.
Yeah.
This is the only way they could have known this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. And there's also another great book, I don't know if it's his or not. You might know, though. The title of which is just brilliant. The title is "So I'm Not Lazy, Crazy, or Stupid."
Two women wrote that. One of which last name is Romano, I believe. Very, very great book. It just entertaining, hilarious, but insightful as could be.
Wow, that's great. Just the title alone is freeing.
Exactly right.
Great.
Right.
Well, we're going to get to in a little bit about the black cloud and how it followed you around and how that relates to ADHD. But first, I want to kind of get a sense of your obsession, I guess is probably a fair word to use, with Superman. You were always playing cop in some form or another, and you've got this fascination with Superman that began at a very early age, but it went beyond the fascination that most children, particularly boys, tend to have with him. So tell me a little bit about where did all that come from, and how does that live for you today?
Well, I mean, like most healthy kids throughout the world, not just, the United States, I mean, everybody, it's arguably the most recognizable symbol for good ever. I mean, you go anywhere in the world, they see that red diamond with the red S in it and the yellow background, everybody knows exactly what it is. I mean, arguably there's not many things in any kind of culture, let alone, pop culture, that is as recognizable. And for me, I remember vivid memories as a little kid, being home with my mother even before school, before kindergarten, watching, George Reeves, the old TV show Superman. And mm-hmm. It was just it's one of those things. As a little kid, it's all, wow, what a great thing, up, up, and away, the whole bit, and fighting crime and bending steel in his bare hands. But then as I got older and started to realize how the world works and so forth, just, man, what if a man like that actually existed? Man, how incredible would that be? Such unbelievable, seemingly limitless powers, yet devoted to serving others, never once using those powers for his own gain, just always using it to help others. And I'm like, wow, what if such a person existed? Man, what a difference. I mean, it certainly wouldn't solve everything, but man, what a difference it would be. What an example that would be set. And just that has always been in the back of my mind, even as an adult, I think, wow, certainly, obviously, physics, we know that it's completely impossible, but the ideals are sound. I mean, truth, mm-hmm. justice, freedom. I mean, these things are what any logical, reasonable person aspires to.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that kind of a thing that keeps me going. And, of course, everybody now throughout my life has associated me with that, being a 6'4", 48-year-old, 8-year-old kid nerd at heart. I'm constantly bombarded every birthday, Father's Day, and Christmas with something with the S on it. So but it keeps me young. Definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny. I just remember being delighted when you and I first met face-to-face after knowing each other for, close to a year, I think, by phone.
Yeah,
through our mastermind group. Yeah. And you picked me up. And I remember you were going to be coming right from work, so you were going to pick me up in the patrol car. But then you were getting home from work early. You left work earlier than you expected, so you weren't going to be coming by. So I texted you and I said, "Well, then I don't want to see you at all if you're not picking me up in the cop car." and you're like, "Oh, now you sound like my family."
Yeah.
And then you pick me up in your car, and there your floor mats have the Superman emblem embossed in them. And I was just like, "That's just brilliant." Where did you get those?
Actually, my family got those for me. Either my wife did or one of my siblings did one Christmas, and it's. Yeah, something inevitably has it, and no matter what the present is or what the occasion is, it's something's going to have it on it. So,
wow, that's great. Tell me a little bit about, I just loved your book, and by the way, I recommend everybody who's listening to go to Amazon.com and order a copy of it. It's such a delightful book, and what I loved, I mean, your stories that you tell. First of all, you tell them so well.
Thank you.
Which is an art. You really do. You just have a way of engaging your reader and engaging your audience. One of my favorite stories, and whenever I talk about you, as I was telling people about what my upcoming show was going to be and I was interviewing you, I always shared with them the story about, but I'm going to let you share it, what you used to do as a little kid, though, with your Superman costume and jumping out of your bedroom window. Tell us about that.
This is my mother really tells this story the best, but I'll give it my best.
I'm sure she does.
rendition. But as always, you know, like, I love playing cops and robbers, and, you know, of course, Starsky and Hutch back when I was growing up. That was a great game. But again, it always ended up being.
Oh, I hope
my
your hair
one.
Didn't look like that, though. That's all I have to say.
No, not at that point. It didn't. No. I would inevitably end up falling back, especially if I was alone. You know, I could always entertain myself. I've just donned the red cape, be it either a towel or, you know, blanket or whatever, and just play Superman. And I'd be by myself and just fighting crime, fighting that never-ending battle, you know, changing the course of mighty rivers and doing all that fun stuff, to include leaping a tall building. Well, in this case, it would be my second-floor bedroom window. So as I'm going about my adventures, my mother had come home from Mass with her friend Mark Riley. And at the time, we were living in Glen Ellen, a beautiful little town just west of Chicago. Marg and my mom are sitting in front of my house talking in Marg's car, and my mother has her back to the house, and Marg is facing the house. And as they're talking, my mother says Marg's face goes white. Oh, my God, what's Billy doing? My mother turns just in time to see me dive out said window, land on my grandfather's car, roll off the car, jump up, and run into the backyard, completely unhurt, unfazed. I was fighting crime. I was going after the evildoers. My mother, without missing a beat, turns to Marg and says, oh, that's just Billy playing Superman. And that was that. But that was just one of many instances. And so,
I guess your mom learned not to have heart attacks about simple things like that after a while.
Oh, that was tame by comparison. So,
yeah, I'm imagining those things were kind of regular occurrences for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I definitely have some comeuppance with my parents as far as giving them gray hair, that's for sure.
Well, that's great. That's why I love those of you who are listening in front of your computer, the slideshow that's rolling through the player. You'll see the little blonde boy standing on the ledge with his Superman cape. I think that pretty much sums up your childhood.
Basically, and not too far from the truth being on a roof of a structure there. So.
Right, exactly. That's great. That's really great. So your life wasn't always play, fun, and games. You had a rough time of it for a while, and even now the black cloud that you speak of continues to kind of hide around the corner from you at times and rears its ugly head. There are a couple stories in your book about that, but so tell me a little bit about the black cloud. What's that all about?
For me, as we all have gone through phases in our lives, you hear everybody talk about certain times where they feel like that. If something is overshadowing them, that feeling that, why can't I get this right? Well, for me, it's been a lifelong thing. And especially in school is where I started to notice it. And the older I got, I could almost feel it. Like, something is not right here. Why can't I just be like everyone else? Mm-hmm. And that has always been at the forefront since first grade. Since I walked into school in this little town of Glen Ellen, I had already completed first grade in New York. And when my father got transferred, we moved out there. When we got to this school, it was a Catholic school they first put me in. They sat me down in a class, and it was late to begin with. All of a sudden, it dawned on me that I was in the first grade again. So mm-hmm. all of these things going through my mind, I'm like, wow, they're making me repeat it. I got left back. And so that my very first day of school in my new town, already off to a bad start. So from that point on, you know, just so many other things, I just could not get a grasp on school, couldn't wrap, why can't I just be like everyone else? And later on in life, especially now with all the research I've done in the ADHD, that in and of itself is what would cause it. I would focus on these things and not realize my full potential and what I was actually capable of doing. And then there'd be times where I would get caught in the flow of something I caught my focus and I enjoyed. I wouldn't think about it. And when I wouldn't think about it, it was almost savant-like that I'd be able to do things. Mm-hmm. And my entire life would be like that. So when it came time as I got older, you know, the theme of everybody's scholastic and life in general, if you want something bad enough and you're willing to put in the work for it, you will succeed at it. Well, not so fast, everybody. Let's take a look at Billy Brett. And that's what happens. I would focus so hard and worry about it. You know, there's a difference between the hyper-focus and the worry. And my theme was always worrying about it. So what I thought was hyper-focus at the time was just worry, and that worry beget the failures. And it wasn't until very recently, you know, and in writing the book and doing the research, that I finally realized that if I just would relax and let my natural capabilities take over, I could get these things done. But even in the case with the rifle school that I told you about, you know, a couple weeks ago, I just got all worked up that, I'm just going to fail, to the point where, ironically, I just was at peace with it, relaxed, and I almost did perfect. So it was just instances like that that just I felt dogged throughout my life by this cloud, and I put a kind of a visual to it to help kind of explain it in a way that I could deal with it.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense, but...
Sure. No, it totally does. And here's why it does. I mean, I know that in the work that I do as a coach, one of the things that we talk about also in the when I teach the coach training program at IPEC is how when our energy is focused in the past or in the future, right, as opposed to in the present, we're not as successful with things. So if we go into the present moment upset about something that's happened in the past or worried and anxious about something that's going to happen in the future that we really don't know is going to happen, but we've made up in our heads that it is, right? Mm-hmm. All of our energy gets dissipated, and there's not a whole lot left. You know, there's only 100% of your energy. So if 60% of it is in the past, you know, and 38% of it is in the future worrying, you only got 2% of what's left to really focus on the present moment and be successful. So it almost makes sense that once you've kind of resigned, you stopped worrying about it.
Exactly.
And then you actually had your energy and your focus. And also what's interesting, too, is I know Halliwell talks in his book about, as you've alluded to a couple of times now, the ability to almost hyper-focus for an extended period of time that people with ADHD have. He says in his book, he talks about how attention deficit disorder is actually not really an accurate name, because it implies that there's a deficit of attention, when in actuality there's sometimes a deficit and sometimes a hyper-focus to a fault, but that also has some advantages. So he prefers to call it attention inconsistency disorder.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can hyper-focus or not have a lot of focus. It's just not in our control when one of those happens or not. So it doesn't necessarily serve us as well. So anyway, but it sounds like, you know, so there, by resigning almost, you were able to really focus on the present, and then perhaps your hyper-focus kicks in and really works to your advantage.
Exactly. Almost reflex-like, well, thankfully, too. I mean,
sure. No, definitely. Definitely. So I know that, you know, you've talked about, like, the kind of things that you would do that just drove people around you to just drove them crazy, like, what is wrong with you? What are you doing? why are you doing this? Why are you making us miserable? The thing about wrecking your friend's car, and which from what I understood from the book was just like pretty, like just another in a stream of things that you would have done that would have got you into some amazingly enormous trouble. So what was that? What happened with your friend's car?
It's funny. My buddy Steve was a little bit older than me, so he had his license before I did. We were in high school. So every so often he'd let me take the wheel of his mom's station wagon. Now, you know, we're talking about like a 1976 Malibu wagon V6, which was probably at that time a V5, you know, 5.5,
right,
whatever. So, you know, just a basic car and whatnot. Well, he eventually gets his own car. He saved his money and bought himself a Camaro. Much bigger engine. Much faster. And one day I thought, wouldn't it be funny if I took the keys to his car and moved it on him one day after school and just moved parking spots so he'd think it was stolen. So I get his keys, and I go out to the parking lot, and I get the car, start it up. Again, I'm a seasoned pro at this point because I've driven his mom's wagon, right? So put this monster of a NASCAR into gear, and already it, like, leaps from the curb where it was parked. I'm like, okay, this thing is definitely a lot more powerful So I ease it out, get it into the driveway. And again, now school is letting out, so all the buses are lined up and filling up and getting ready to leave. So there's hundreds of kids and teachers and everyone about. I get to the end of the driveway of the school, and I go to pull out. I thought I just tapped the gas. Well, again, we're talking about a monster V8 performance engine. This thing leapt from the driveway. I fishtailed one way, fishtailed another way, couldn't recover, boom, right into a huge tree directly in front of the school.
Oh, no.
And all of the aforementioned faculty and hundreds of fellow students. Well, thankfully, I wasn't hurt, but I was sitting there going, oh, boy. And as my friend said as he jumped out the window to run away, Billy, you did it now. And that's all I kept thinking about. It's like, yep, one more thing, I did it again. You know, I just the amount of trouble I thought I was going to, and knew I was going to be in at that point, and
sure.
Rightfully so. So.
Sure. And that was pretty much a mantra for you, I gather, too, Billy. Oh, my God, I did it again. Oh, my God,
yep.
What now?
And I genuinely didn't think I was doing anything wrong or malicious. I mean, it was wrong, you know, I shouldn't do it, but nothing like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do this. I just, you know, hey, seemed like a good idea at the time. You know,
you were trying to have some fun.
Exactly. And I wasn't about to joyride or hurt anybody or do anything. I just thought, hey, I'll just move the car. Well, just like everything else, you know, I did it again. So.
Wow. So that was another example of the black cloud having come to roost on you.
Yeah, and of my own making, too. So.
Sure. Sure. And did it feel like your own making at the time, or is that an insight that you got later on?
No, it at that point I was starting to be aware of it, and especially that afternoon when, you know, the faculty, the dean had called my parents. Well, my parents were away, and my aunt and uncle, my Uncle Bob and Aunt Sally, God bless them, they picked me up, and Aunt Sally, of course, they're both nurturing and loving, but Uncle Bob was clearly upset. And he looked at me and finally said on the ride home, he was quiet for the most part, and then finally said, is this enough, Billy? I mean, what's it going to take? Is this enough? Mm-hmm. Or, you know, what is it going to take for you to wake up? And to this day, I can remember it as though he just said it to me.
Wow.
And it really hit home, and it just
What did you feel when he said that to you?
It was a punch in the gut but wasn't a surprising punch in the gut, because I knew it. You know, I knew there was always that voice saying, no, don't do it, you know, but of course I never listened to that voice. So I was always like, oh, come on, you know, the proverbial little devil on my
sure.
on my other shoulder. No, it'll be fine. Just move the car. It'll be fine, you know. But that really hit home, and it's really – I was always kind of a soul searcher from day one, and even as a little kid, you know, getting back to the Superman, you know, how I like it. It wasn't so much – I don't associate myself with Superman so much as I do – Clark Kent, you know, and it's and a lot of times Clark Griswold, to be exact, but you know, as a kid I've always been, you know, taller and bigger than the other kids in my age group, and you know, but my personality was such that some of these so-called alpha males would pick up on that and pick on me, so to speak, and not bully per se, just, you know, make fun of me and kind of, you know, tease me and, you know, call me dummy and stupid and kind of intimidate me, but I would swallow crow, because I knew the moment I would lash out or do anything to defend myself, I would be the one perceived as a bully. And
right.
The teachers and parents and whatever. Exactly. You'll pick on somebody your own size. What are you doing? Meanwhile, I hadn't done anything. They had started it. But so I kept it to myself, and I swallowed hard all the time. And it would get worse up until about, I guess, junior high or so. And then finally, I guess, the so-called alpha males, as I started to develop even bigger and stronger, and, you know, I was pretty much hitting the weights at a regular interval at that point, a lot of these so-called alpha males figured it wasn't worth the risk anymore. So, and my personality at that point started to take over. I was more outgoing, and I was always good at making friends, so that wasn't a problem, and the sports helped out. So at that point, it kind of ebbed away, so to speak, but
right.
I definitely more related to the Clark end of it than anything else.
Right. So what was, ultimately, what was the rock bottom like for you? I mean, I know that you would put your heart and soul into the first Suffolk County Police Department entrance exam, the New York City Police Department exam. Those did not go the way you wanted to. What was the point at which, looking back, you can see you were at the rock bottom, like there could just be nowhere but up from there?
Well, it was, I guess, around then, you know, I put so much into, at the time when when my wife and I first met, we were working at the hotel together, and at that time, I thought I was going to be an actor, stuntman, you know, that kind of thing. I was putting my energy towards that. I was, you know, working during the week and on the weekends, and during the day, I would take the train into New York City and go to HB Studios down in the Village and take the drama classes, and, you know, so I was working towards that. But in the meantime, making ends meet, was working at the hotel, and as I made assistant director of security, all the guys that worked for me were either active duty or retired law enforcement. And through their behest, they're like, Billy, you ought to be a cop. Take the test. You'd be a great cop, you know. And getting to know them, and especially working with them in the hotel that we worked at, was a very high-energy nightclub in the hotel. Constantly had incidents and stuff going on. So I got good experience by working with these people. And I started becoming very interested in the job, so I started putting in for these police entrance exams. And, of course, Suffolk County Police Department, they're the highest paid in the country, if not the world, and it's a great department. So finally, with all the aforementioned experiences I had in education, I knew, okay, I got to get serious, I got to study. So there were study groups that were offered. I took a couple classes and prepping for the test, and everybody was just, Billy, this is you. This is definitely your job. This is it. You're going to get it. I had a couple friends on the department. They're like, yeah, once you get the test done, we'll put a good word for you and we'll get there. And it's like, okay, great. You know, everything was pointing in that direction. So take the test and thought I did, you know, okay. You know, I didn't either way. Well, with that test, unless you score a 99 or better, you don't have a prayer. It's just everybody and their uncle wants that job, and so it's tied up, and so the bureaucracy you have to go through. Well, I only ended up scoring like a 72, so I was devastated. I mean, it just, because I had put so much into it, and again, going through what I had gone through as a kid with school, and I thought, wait a minute, how could this be? I put 110% in. I studied. I worked hard. I wanted it, and it still didn't happen. So I'm like, okay. I mean, as devastated as I was, I just started reapplying to taking other exams, you know, Nassau County, New York City, you know, and as much as I didn't want New York City, I said, well, at least it's a fallback. You know, everybody who takes that test gets that job. I mean, all you had to do was pass and you get called. And that's traditionally always been the case. Well, then we come to Billy Brett, because this is what always convinced me there was a black cloud, because I took the test, scored in the high 90s, but my list number was in, like, the 50,000 range. So, again, no hope of getting hired. So I'm like, what is going on here? So that's what really made me think.
I felt like there's, like, this conspiracy against you, it must have felt like.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right.
Wow. Wow. Before we continue on that, I just want to take a very quick break since we're about halfway through the show and just announce the next three shows that are coming up. So we're going to come back to those failing of those exams and then when things began to turn around for Billy in just a moment. So first of all, our upcoming shows on our varying networks, actually, between the Life Coach Radio Network, International Life Coach Radio, and Life Coach Chat Channel. The next three shows we've got coming up are tomorrow, that's November 18th at 9 p.m., is Frank Talk, How to Worry Well. Frank Talk with host David Frank Gomes is a show about the art and science of a happy, meaningful life. And each week, he discusses practical ways to overcome barriers and make our lives better in very practical ways. So that's tomorrow night at 9, Frank Talk, How to Worry Well. And then the next day, what's that? That's Tuesday. Tuesday at 7 p.m. on our sister channel, our sister network, International Life Coach Radio, is the DIY for Your Soul, Fostering an Attitude of Gratitude. So it's that time of the year with the crisp autumn air and winter rapidly approaching, and soon it's going to be Thanksgiving, North America's National Day to Give Thanks. And what better time than now to think about gratitude? So join life and life purpose coach Tim Billiter, as he welcomes his guest, life coach and the founder of and executive producer of Life Coach Radio Networks, Russell Terry, to hear them discuss fostering an attitude of gratitude. So you'll listen in as they're joined by additional Life Coach Radio Network coaches who will all be talking about the importance of practicing gratitude and how it benefits our overall life. And you'll also learn about Russ's forthcoming book called My Gratitude Journal. And then lastly, back here again on December 1st, my next show, Mark My Words, and that's going to be Living Life at the Seventh Level. So you'll join me as I interview Mr. Luke Iorio, the CEO, president of IPEC Coaching, where I did my study and certification, where I'm now an instructor. So Luke and I will be discussing what it's like to live life at what's known at IPEC as the seventh level. That's a level of non-judgment, absolute passion, and creation. And we'll discuss the blocks that keep us from seventh level living, some ideas for experiencing more level seven energy in our lives, and the unique book that Luke and the folks at IPEC are going to be releasing soon about life at the seventh level. So join me for this enlivening chat with Luke. And now let's come back to Billy Brett, the Fairfax County police officer who had a life of a black cloud following him and now is a decorated and highly esteemed and loved police officer in his community. And it's like, what a change that is. So we left off talking about actually failing those police exams, or not, I guess you don't really fail them, but you didn't pass them, and not getting hired, and that was really kind of a real rock bottom for you.
Absolutely.
So when did things finally begin to start turning around for you?
Well, thankfully, during that period, you know, as I said, Jackie and I, you know, she was my rock. She always stood by me, and it's funny. I'll give you a quick story as far as the signs in my life, always relating back to the Superman thing. My dad was a recovering alcoholic and a devout Catholic his whole life. One day we go to my sister's house, and Jack and I walk in, and we see everybody, and my dad pulls us aside. He goes, "Wait till you hear this one." Now, he would go to his early bird meetings with AA, and he goes, "Wait till you hear this. Today I go in and I've got a new sponsor." And it turns out he's a psychic medium. And my dad, being a skeptic of that stuff, as most people are, it's like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, okay. He goes, he listened as the guy kind of did readings on some of the people in the room. And he goes, "Okay, whatever." He goes, "Oh, buddy, you're easy," says to my dad. He goes, "Let's see, you're married. You have six kids, John, Rosemary, Aileen, Christopher, Stephen, and Robert." And my dad, being genuinely impressed, goes, "Yeah, you had me, but you missed on one of them. I don't have a son named Steven." He goes, "Huh." And the guy looked puzzled. And yeah, although my dad was impressed, and he just met the guy, so the guy had no way of knowing my dad, and it's the reason they call it Alcoholics Anonymous. You don't know anything about them. And he had literally just met this guy this morning. And the guy looked perplexed, and he's going, "So it's not Sam, or does he have a nickname like Slick?" And my dad's like, "No, you're way off." He goes, "That's weird." He goes, "I'm seeing this big red letter S right here on his chest." And
oh, no.
My father stops dead in his tracks. Like, how could this guy have known that? I mean, in any way,
no
shape,
way.
Or form. How does that happen? And I'm not a believer in that either. You know, it's funny. My wife and my daughters and I still every so often will flip channels and see that show Long Island Medium. And we get a kick out of it just because we feel like we're home. You know, it's just hearing all the accents.
Sure.
And you wonder, is any of this stuff true? And just, I'm still a skeptic, but okay, even though I'm a skeptic, how could he have possibly picked up on that, let alone the names of my siblings, but how could he have picked up on something like that?
That's amazing.
Exactly, and I thought that was just, there are signs throughout our lives that people, the energy, I guess, we put out, people pick up on, and that's the only thing I could equate with that. And somehow this guy picked up on that echo maybe of some kind. But things like that, it was right around that time that I had one of the guys who worked for me at the hotel was now the chief of law enforcement for the ASPCA Law Enforcement Division in New York City. So he looked into it, and I put a resume in, and he brought me in for an interview, and I ended up getting that job, which was a great job. It opened so many doors, and that's when things started to turn around.
Wow.
As I'm My in-laws had moved down here to Virginia, and at their behest, I started putting in with jobs down here. But at the same time, the brand new Animal Planet channel was filming a documentary on law enforcement division, the ASPCA. So I was one of the featured players, as it were, on the pilot episode of that, which now it's a big hit for Animal Planet. They do every city in the country now.
Right.
So it really, that was about the point where things started to turn around for me.
Wow. Wow. That's really great. That's an amazing story. I had forgotten about that. Because you wrote about that in your book, didn't you?
Yep. Yes, I did.
Yeah. And I totally forgotten about that story. That's amazing. By the way, I forgot to mention also, if anybody would like to call in and you have a question for Billy, please feel free, or even a comment or sharing of your own experiences, please feel free to call us at 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397, and we'll be taking your calls. So tell me, I know, I feel like this is a good time to ask this question. The title of your book, The Neverending Battle Part, I think that's pretty obvious as a Superman reference, but Creating a Wonderful Life with Imagination and Purpose. What is it from your life that you learned that sort of you carry forward into the idea of creating a wonderful life with imagination and purpose? Where does that part of the title come from?
When I finally realized that my absolute greatest gift, my greatest power and ability, that of which is beyond that of mortal man, is my imagination. That has always been, as I said before, when I was a kid, my parents even attested, when I was really young, on up through my childhood, I would have just as much fun, if not more so, playing off by myself, either in my room or just off by myself, because of my imagination. And it was funny, if I ever got into trouble and they sent me to my room, hey, no problem, that's where all my stuff is, you know. And
right.
I would just, and they'd have to come and get me to remind me, oh, it's time to eat, you know. It's like, oh, okay, I got to come down there, you know. So as I had that aha moment later on and started doing research, of all people, Albert Einstein said that the imagination is the precursors to the future. It's the coming attractions of what is to be. And I'm like, my God, of all people to have nailed it on the head, you know, it's Albert friggin' Einstein. So, and that in and of itself, I wasn't even aware of that was driving my life, you know. It's, mm-hmm. And if I would just let it, the things I can do with my imagination, you know, nobody could touch me there.
Right.
So that was always a driving force. And that's, I think, what gravitated people to me as I grew up, well, so does physically anyway.
I'm with you on that one.
Yeah, it's just the Peter Pan complex, you know. It's just,
yep, that's what my mom calls me, Peter Pan.
Yeah, exactly. It's just life is just too short to be so serious, and I think that's what drives me and really makes me who I am and gives me my purpose. So that was definitely the catalyst.
Wow. Well, yeah, and I definitely get that about you, just knowing you, Billy. It's like, you know, even when you're not having a good time of it, you have a playful nature about you. And I can see how that's really probably, you know, served you well and gotten you through some of your darker times in your life.
It definitely has.
Yeah. So what made you decide to write a book?
Well, it was all of the things just adding up over the years, you know. I just, when I was little and they realized there was an issue with me, they, you know, we're talking early, mid-70s, they took me to all the specialists, all the, you know, child psychiatrists and so forth, and they said, oh, clearly this child is hyperactive. Let's get him on Ritalin. And again, back then, you know, it was still an early study, and so they tried it on me, and of course, there's a small percentage of people that Ritalin really does nothing for, and, well, guess who falls into that category? So
the
teacher
said, black cloud once again.
Oh, yeah, and the teachers were like, get him off of this. This is, it took away my spark, you know. I was definitely more pliable, but I was more like a drone. I had no anything special whatsoever. It was just kind of, you know, did nothing for me. So they took me off it, and we just learned to cope. And I struggled, but I got through. And I knew that the issue was there, but didn't know what to call it, never really paid attention to it, and it kind of just faded into the background, and I just got through life. And it wasn't until I got onto the motor squad and, you know, became a police officer down at Fairfax. I was at a competition down in Charleston, South Carolina. And I am fortunate enough now to be a member of one of the most elite motorcycle squads in the country. And we were down there at this competition with several other departments, and I was having a great week of practice going through the obstacle courses with the bike, you know. And I'd only been on, a little over a year. So I'm very new at it, but I was having a good week. I was just almost savant-like. The bike and I had almost become one. Like, things were just going really, really well. And as I later found out, I was in that state where I wasn't worried. I was just letting it happen. I was doing everything I was supposed to be doing. And that night, as a matter of fact, the night before, my two senior guys in my squad, who happened to be the best, literally, riders in the country, the Obi-Wan Kenobi and Yoda of Harley-Davidson motorcycle riding, respectively, and they pulled me aside one day, that night, the night before the game, and they're like, hey, Billy, we don't know what you're doing, but keep it up, because you are way ahead of where you should be right now, and if you do this tomorrow, you're going to trophy, no problem. Now, normally, when I'd have something like that happen, I'd start thinking about it, start worrying, and mess up. Well, I didn't. I wasn't worried. I felt fine. Well, come game day, the next day, again, I felt relaxed, no problem. Got through the first half flawless. The second half of the course was a speed run. As soon as I let the clutch out, it was as though I'd never been on the bike before. I took out the first 7 or 8 cones in the gate of this first course, and it was just anarchy from that point on. I was so angry, I was ready to rip the handlebars off the motor. It just, and in the back of my mind, it's like, here we go again. And I managed to finish it, parked the bike, and everybody saw my face. They didn't come near me. I got off and went for a walk. I probably walked for about an hour, Mark, maybe an hour and a half. And it just run. How is this and why is this happening to me? The how and why just kept echoing in my mind. And when I finally got home, Jackie's like, you know, this is everything to do with your ADHD. I'm like, what do you mean ADHD? And she says, you know, the attention deficit. I said, I know what it means, but I said, I was hyperactive as a kid. And not knowing that that was what they now call hyperactive, is the ADD and so forth. So that rang the bell, and I'm like, okay. And I started doing some research and saw a specialist, and the specialist suggested the book, the specialist Linda Miner. She's like, you got to read this book by Dr. Halliwell. And that's where it all started and went from there. And the aha moment began. And the therapist, Linda, was telling me I should keep a journal. Well, I think after the first 3 sentences in the first page of my journal, it hit me. Write a book. Think about how many families with kids like me that this could possibly help.
Absolutely.
And so it just flowed. I mean, literally for about a year and a half, I did nothing but sit and write every free moment I had. And
wow,
it was as though I just knew it. It was that epiphany that you hear about and you see in movies and songs are written about. It was a done deal. I knew it. I was going to write a book. It was going to get published. People were going to buy it, and that was that. And it happened exactly that way. I wrote it, sent it out, found a publisher, a small house down here, independent house down here in Virginia, and these two people in the publishing company read it, loved it. Yes, we want it, and it went from there. So,
wow,
it's been something.
And there was a review that somebody wrote. It was a gentleman with an 8-year-old son that wrote a review on Amazon.com that was pretty moving. Tell us about that.
It was the first couple months after the book was published, I started checking. You know, the Barnes & Noble website and the Amazon website, you could see reviews that people will post. And one gentleman wrote just an absolutely phenomenal review. I mean, it literally hit me home where I vindicated me writing the book. And he said that his wife and he had read everything that the so-called experts had written about the topic. And he underscored the everything. Nothing had helped us the way Billy's book had helped us. And then he cited how his son is in school lying for no reason. And then he comes to find out that it was because he felt inadequate, which is exactly why I would tell stories when I was a little kid. You know, I just felt inadequate and I wanted to draw the focus away from the fact that I didn't know the answer and felt dumb. So I've come up with these extravagant stories. And apparently that's exactly what this couple's son was doing. And just and he made some references to Superman and stuff. So it was very touching, and again, it hit home as to why I wrote the book in the first place. So it was definitely worth it.
Wow. Well, I encourage everybody listening to go to the Amazon.com website and read that review, as well as the other ones that are there. They're all very touching and really great. Again, the title of the book, Billy's Never-Ending Battle. So, when I read that review, I was very touched. What did that do for you? Like, what did that, when you read that, how did you feel? What did it do for Billy?
I literally, physically, stood up a lot straighter. The chest came out even more. It was one of those moments, like, you know, cue the music here. It's that kind of a thing, you know, and it was just the fact that I was able to help just that one family. And I thought, well, if there's one, there's got to be more.
Yeah.
And that's been the push, the catalyst for me. So, you know, I just go from that point. And, you know, of late, where I thought my blackout had returned, you know, going through financial troubles and so forth and all of these things, it finally dawned on me, and I touched on a little in the book as well, it's right there in front of me the whole time. It's not about me. And I finally have come to terms and realized the fact that it's never been about me. The moment my daughters came into my life is where everything changed. And I couldn't see it for the nose on my face, and it was that clear and blatant as it could be. My title changed forever from Billy Brett to Daddy. And from here on in, that will be my first and best title. And all the capes, all the badges, all the boots, all the bikes in the world can't change or improve that title. And I'm reminded of the daily. And I said, and I thought, well, in my heart, that's where I'm supposed to be. Everything I do is for them. And if I go from that energy, then that's my life is complete. And to see them thrive the way they're thriving and just to hear them giggle and laugh, you know, it makes it all worthwhile. So that in and of itself is my immortality, the two of them. So
wow.
I have that. My life is complete. So they could take my house tomorrow. I could lose my job. That's fine. I don't care. I got them. And that'll never change.
That is just so incredible, Billy. And you know, it's funny, as whenever I talk about you, I always say there is one bit of kryptonite that exists for Billy as Superman, and that is get him talking about his kids, and he becomes mush.
Yeah.
All of his superpowers are gone.
Yeah, just don't let them know that, because they know my secrets already, and they know how to work it.
Of course. But now it's so endearing. It's actually really endearing, and it's hearing you talk about that, it's the same theme again too of you being there to serve others, you know, there's so many people that work in law enforcement that come from one place or another, from my observation, and you know, some come from service of others, and some come from wanting to control others and have authority, you know, I think there's few in the, you know, in the second category. I think that's a small minority, and unfortunately they stand out, giving the rest of you guys a really undeserved bad name, I wish it wasn't that way.
I agree.
And you certainly you come from that place of just like you're here to serve. You're here to protect and serve, literally. And when you talk about your family, that comes through. When you talk about your work, that comes through. And, you know, as we envision you as a little kid jumping out your window, making your mom's friends just go white as ghosts, that's shining through. It's shining through. So, wow. You know, some people often ask me as a coach, you know, about, like, how valid is it to look at what you used to do well as a kid and enjoy as a kid, and align that with what your career should be? And I add to that, not only is that a place to look, but look at the things you got in trouble for as a kid, and you might find where your career should be. right?
Yep. Who better to preach against sin than a sinner, right?
That's right. Well, you know, who's working for all the computer security companies now? It's all the hackers that broke into
That's
security
right.
systems. They broke into computers, you know. And
exactly.
Norton and McAfee hire them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So it's no wonder that you earned a Medal of Valor in 2002. Obviously quite well deserved. That must have been a moment for you that was an off the charts, not predictable, probably would have happened anyway kind of moment.
Yeah, I would agree. It's just definitely a different situation, that's for sure.
Yeah, not something that you really saw in your own future.
No, definitely not.
So one of the things that you're also known for, in addition to the awards and recognitions that you've received throughout the academy and throughout your career as a police officer and with the rodeo and everything, one of the things that you're known for, as I understand most of your fellow officers in your department are, but you particularly, is your level of politeness with traffic stops. Now, most people who get stopped by a police officer do not report that they had a good experience. But you get people thanking you.
I've had that on several occasions, actually in court, no less. So.
Wow. So tell me a little about that.
Well, and every cop I know and work with and have known, believe it or not, are very similar to me. They may not present that out on the street, but a lot of people in my profession tend to keep their guard up and are – as a hazard of the job, suspicious by nature. It's just the way it works. And as I told you once, there's a great piece out there that Paul Harvey did about that, about the police officer and what we have to go through. It parodied my life. You know, at one point he talks about how, you know, if you get hit and do nothing, you're a coward. If you hit back, you're a bully, you know, and it's, God, how true is that? You know, and it's just the public's
right.
perception of us. It can, unfortunately, lately, especially with the media and so forth, and people's quick reaction to, oh, they're just bullies and they're just doing this because they're on a power trip. Well, let me ask you this. How many professions do you know, other than the military, that you have to swear an oath to do? There aren't many. And, you know, that's something I know that I personally, as well as the people I work with, take it very seriously. You know, it's to uphold the law, protect the innocent. And arrest the violators.
Mm-hmm.
It's as far as my daily activity is a traffic cop. Well, when people say, you know, officer, yeah, I got to tell you, you're the nicest cop I've ever dealt with. Well, I'll turn their attention to the bike. They'll say, you see that? They pay me to ride that, so I can't be in a bad mood. So that always gets a chuckle. And plus the fact that, listen, I'm not a hypocrite. I know it's not a fun thing getting a ticket, but at the same time, we're all adults. You're driving a 3,000-4,000-pound weapon. If you're not 110% focused on what you're doing, especially nowadays when everybody's minds are everywhere but driving that 4,000-pound weapon, you could cause havoc, and that's what we're there for. And hopefully just seeing, you know, these 6-foot-4 goons riding motorcycles, riding tickets will just – elicit that voluntary compliance. But at the same time, people must realize what we deal with day in and day out, and that not everybody is equipped to deal with it the same way. Some people just keep that stone face up to try, and that's their defense. Me, I go through life the same way with everybody. I treat everybody as I want to get treated. Yeah, I have a very dangerous, serious job, but, you know, there's no reason that once I've secured and made any encounter safe that I can't treat people nicely and, you know, try and get a smile out if I can. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, that's just the way I operate. You know, it's not everybody can or does, but I can personally vouch for every cop that I've ever known and worked with that they feel the same way I do. It's mm-hmm. just some perceptions are different, and we all got to understand that. They're not seeing it the same way we're seeing it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. No, that makes sense. Wow. Well, so what would you say, Billy, is sort of the bottom line message you have for people out there listening that are dealing with just wondering if they're going to ever get their own life together or get what they want, and they're on that struggle. As you look at what you've been through and how many people you've helped, even through the writing of the book, as well as just the people you have contact with on a daily basis, what's your message to everybody?
It's funny, too. I've in my adult life, and it was after I turned 40, I've gotten tattoos, one on each arm. Now, one on my right forearm is the motor wheel. It's the symbol of the highway patrolman. I'm sure people are familiar with it. It's a spoked motorcycle wheel with an arrow going through it with the wings of Mercury coming off that center spoke. And it represents forever moving forward swiftly. That is on my right arm, and on my left arm, I have the Kryptonian symbol of hope. And DC Comics a few years ago and the show Smallville came up with an actual alphabet consisting of certain symbols and shapes and so forth. This one particular symbol, being a Superman nerd that I am, I didn't want to get the S because that's been done. You know, Bon Jovi and Shaquille O'Neal and all the star athletes all have the S already. I'm like, yeah, it's been done. So when I realized, oh, let me get this. It's the symbol of hope. So for those who are out there questioning themselves and maybe suffering their own black cloud, just remember, you got to keep moving forward. Keep going forward, never backward, because you can't change what's behind you. And always have hope for what's in front of you. That never changes, and that's why I keep going. And, you know, I'll still have my bouts with my black cloud, but I finally realized, for me, like I told you earlier, anything I do to serve me for my own personal service is wasted effort. My first and best responsibility and title is Daddy, and all of my energy has to go towards that. And that's when I realized that's where I was making my mistakes. And for others, don't worry about other people's mistakes. The only time our lives are wrong is when we start pointing the finger at others and telling them they're wrong. Who are we or anyone to tell someone else they're wrong unless it's a safety hazard to themselves or others and or breaking the law. You know, they can do harm in some way. You want to live your life the way you see fit, then do it. Just do it. Don't wait for it. Don't make excuses about it. Don't bellyache about it. Just go do it. And that's what I would suggest, because that's what I'm trying to do. And I just, you know, if I fail today, well, okay, go to bed. Tomorrow I'm going to get up, going to jump on the bike, going to go to Starbucks, get my daily cup of ambition, and I'm going to try to hit it over the fences again. And just that's how we got to do it.
Great. That's what Dolly Parton says in the 9-to-5 movie theme song, right? She goes, and I pour myself a cup of ambition, and if you've got dreams, they'll never take away.
Mine just happens to have 4 shots of espresso in it.
Is that what you have at Starbucks? 4 shots of espresso in your coffee?
Well, I get my venti blonde roast with 4 shots thrown right in it.
Oh, my goodness. That's an ADD cup of coffee.
That's grade A rocket fuel right there. And, of course, sadly, I don't need it because I'm already pumping. It's just I like the taste of it.
That's great. Well, maybe I'll try one of those in your honor tomorrow. And if I call you from the hospital as I'm having palpitations, I don't know why.
You'll be at your target heart rate by 5 a.m.
Exactly. Without working out. Hey, that's great.
Hey, look up in the sky. It's a bird. It's a plane. Oh,
it's Mark on Starbucks. So, great. Well, Billy, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight and for being so inspiring and just being you. And I want to give you a special thanks, too, just for your service every single day in what you do for the community. You know, one thing I didn't even get to ask you about but was, you know, about the I won't because we're out of time, but, you know, just what it was like for you during the Beltway sniper attacks, you know, back in October 2002 with, you know, John Allen Muhammad and his 17-year-old protege, Lee Boyd Malvo, you know, were running around Washington, D.C., killing people. And what a horrible time that was. And it's, you know, you and people like you that were out there.
Well, it's all in the book, so.
Yeah. And again, so thank you for that. Thank you for, you know, risking your life every day to make things better for the rest of us. And again, I can't thank you enough for being on the show and taking the time out to be here tonight.
Well, Mark, it was an absolute honor. I can't thank you enough for having me.
Well, you're very welcome, and I want to encourage everybody again to go out and get a copy of Billy's book. It's Billy's Never Ending Battle, creating a what's the rest of it? It's
creating a wonderful life with imagination and purpose.
Creating a wonderful life with imagination and purpose. Great book. I mean, I read it all on the plane once on a trip to the West Coast, and I was like in tears through half of it. It's just amazing. So it's available, of course, at BarnesandNoble.com, Amazon.com. Just go ahead and search for it on your favorite search engine. So great. So as we wrap up, I just want to say thank you to all of our listeners tonight for being here, and really appreciate your taking the time to listening to Mark My Words. And feel free to mark your words if you like as well. So if you have any comments about the show that you would like to make, please feel free to do that. You can give us any feedback through the Life Coach Radio Network at several different ways. You can visit us at blogtalkradio.com/Life Coach Radio Network and then click on the follow button and send us a message. For feedback directly to me or to suggest a show topic, you can go to markschall.com and fill out the contact form. That's markschall.com and just fill out the contact form there. So I hope that you enjoyed the past hour and that you found it engaging, enlightening, and stimulating. I look forward to speaking with you all again on December 1st when I interview Luke Iorio, the president, CEO of IPEC Coaching, about life at the seventh level. So until then, goodbye, have a pleasant evening, and I look forward to you all listening to me again. So thanks for listening to Mark My Words. I'm Mark, and those are my words.